Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Part police drama, part family drama, and all groundbreaking for Up TV. We're spotlighting Ties That Bind, the channel's first original scripted series, premiering Wednesday night. Creative executive producer Cheryl Anderson joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Another newcomer to midsummer television is Significant Mother, a quirky comedy on the CW developed by alumni of the New York Television Festival going into its second decade this fall. A pair of alumni in this case, co-creators Aaron Cadillo and Rich Keith, both come forward next half hour. Also ahead, see Apple TV in September. Netflix's new series Streak of 2015 continues, our classic trivia question of the week, and that returns, and a tribute to pioneering sportscaster Frank Gifford. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Great Monday afternoon, 10th of August to you and all, and welcome back to the program All About Television. 82 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests over the next hour, you ring us. Here's the number you use. It's good from anywhere. It's 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Again, that number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to others right now by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Cheryl Anderson, the creator of Ties That Bind, joins us live from Vancouver, British Columbia, up north. After these news notes, looks like the week after Labor Day may be the week Apple TV morphs from program delivery set-top box to smart TV making set-top box. BuzzFeed reports that Apple plans to finally show off its TV 2.0 that week with an event that also will highlight an iPhone or iPad upgrade. Likely date, Wednesday, September 9th. The box postponed from an early June announcement at the company's Worldwide Developers Conference will allow hundreds of iPhone and pad app makers to adapt their work for television or create brand new TV services. The new show Netflix Streak continues. Sense 8, the speculative drama coming out 2 months ago, will be back for a second season in 2016. Every one of Netflix series launched this year, from Bloodline to Daredevil, has earned the opportunity for making more episodes. BET will go forward with a three-night miniseries by the iconic pop group New Edition next year. New Edition's member and manager Brooke Payne will serve as co-producers of this scripted project, which should get underway with production early in 2016. And a brief update, we told you on Friday that Fox News Channel had 24 million viewers watching the first 2016 Republican primetime presidential debate last Thursday, a record for Fox News Channel and for cable news networks of an event of this kind. Well, it turns out the so-called happy hour debate that afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time came up somewhat big, 6 million viewers plus. That's double the average primetime audience of the O'Reilly Factor, Fox News' most-watched weeknight series. And that's news notes for today. And now joining us live from Vancouver, British Columbia, an internet radio exclusive, the creator and executive producer of Up's first original scripted series premiering Wednesday night, Ties That Bind, Cheryl Anderson. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why did you decide to do a hybrid drama that's part police, part family?
This came about in my early discussions with Up. I had been fortunate enough to write a movie for them, and it was such a great experience that when they started looking at doing series, I was able to talk to Barbara Fisher, the amazing senior vice president of original programming, about what they wanted. And they were simply looking for a family drama that emphasized real people making real mistakes and paying real consequences. And then as we began to talk about adding a procedural element to that, the idea for the show evolved, and we realized the strength of the show was in its hybrid quality, that all working women try to balance their home life and their professional life. But a woman who's on the front lines in a life and death first responder situation like Allison must feel that so much more sharply than a lot of us with much safer jobs do. And so that was where the notion of making the show half and half to illustrate how her life is half and half came from.
How long did it take to flesh out the idea for the series, and when in your mind did it all come together where Up said, okay, let's go for it, and let's make this our first effort at a scripted program?
I think the from our initial discussions through to my coming up with the idea was to discussing the idea with them and actually starting to write the pilot was probably in the 3 to 4 month range. You know, when my head's in a project, I don't track time as closely as I might, but it was certainly several months of discussion and talking about the elements that we thought would be crucial and how I thought I could best illustrate the kinds of tensions in Allison's life. You know, development is a process, and I was very grateful that they were so both forthright about what they were looking for and so open and welcoming to my ideas about how I could accomplish that if I was fortunate enough to be the one who got the green light.
Go ahead with what you were thinking. I was going to add that Allison is the lead character. She's played by Kelly Williams, who we all know from co-starring roles on both The Practice and more recently Army Wives. And I was curious, as you describe Allison, is she based on anyone you know?
Well, you know, Allison's a little bit of several people I know. I mean, I think all writers rob from their own lives. She's traits of some of the women I admire most, my mother, my sisters-in-law, a couple of my friends. But there's also a part of Allison that I admit is wish fulfillment, because she is the kind of woman personally and professionally that I would like to be. So she's a hybrid too, and I am thrilled that we were able to have Kelly join us on this adventure, because when I started thinking about an actress to embody this part, Kelly was the first one I thought of.
And what kind of trials in both her public life as a police officer and her life raising a family, one of whom, by the way, in the first episode gets in trouble and it really sort of triggers everything, how does it all flesh out?
Well, the central conflict here is that Allison is a detective and in a stunning and unfortunate circumstance has to arrest her own brother. And he's convicted and sent to prison. And in her effort to always do the right thing, both professionally and personally, she decides to bring her brother's children, two teenagers, into her home. She and her husband already have two teenagers. So the conflicts come from the niece and nephew not being happy with what she has done, is how they perceive it, to their father. Her children suddenly having to share space, time, and attention with their very angry cousins. And Allison and her husband, Matt, who have a very strong, very frank marriage, but are still grappling with the extra tension and a lot of unprocessed emotion at the beginning of the season about what exactly it means to take in these two kids. So on the professional side, Allison and her partner, Devin, who is also probably her best friend, played gorgeously by Dion Johnstone, have a series of crimes that they'll investigate. Each crime is closed-ended. And then on the home side, Matt, her husband, who is, again, beautifully played, in this case our actor is Jonathan Scarfe, Matt and Allison have to negotiate the rivalries among the kids, how they're acting out, how they get in troubling situations, primarily in school. because high school is such a fertile ground for that sort of thing. But with both her partners, with Devin and with Matt, Allison's trying to find a way to balance things out, to do the right thing, but she's an honest woman. You can see it's hard, and her efforts aren't always as successful as she would like them to be on either side. And it's my hope that viewers will respond to a woman who is grappling with the flaws in herself, the pressures in her life, and still willing to believe that people are capable of doing great good and trying to help people in all aspects of her life to achieve that.
Tying the Vines, UP's first original scripted series, premieres this Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. We're live from Vancouver, British Columbia, up north with Cheryl Anderson, formerly worked on Charm, worked on a previous original movie for UP called The Town That Came According, and she is this series' creator and executive producer. We have her live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. Great to have you born this Monday afternoon, 10th of August. If you have a question or comment for Cheryl, don't be shy. You use that phone, and you give us a call at 646-652-2906. One of our favorite guests this time of year will be on our program Friday at this hour. He's Terrence Gray. He is the former Comedy Central executive who founded, executive directed, and still does the New York Television Festival, which will enter its second decade this October. And later this half hour, you'll meet two alumni from the festival who have struck it big with the CW's newest original comedy, Significant Mother, Aaron Cardillo and Rich Keith. Tell me what it's like from Los Angeles in our second half hour. Remember, if you want to catch up an episode you missed here on Tomorrow Be Televised, go to our homepage if you're a new listener. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or you can check out the podcast version, audio-wise, on iTunes. When you got your writers and directors together to put this series on, get it produced, Cheryl, what marching orders did you give them? What did you say in terms of, here's the kind of stories I want to tell?
I wanted to make sure that we told honest stories, that no one in this show was larger than life, that nobody's perfect, that we showed people who had made mistakes, and as the people at UP had requested, that we showed that they were paying real price for making those mistakes. Everyone from Tim, Allison's brother, our guest star Luke Perry, through to the various people, both victims and criminals on the professional side of the story, and some of the characters that we meet, friends and such, on the family side. And I was thrilled that my writing staff brought a lot of their personal lives to the table. Specific experiences that they've gone through with their families or were going through with their families now, because the marvelous thing about the writing staff was I had a group of men and women who were at all different stages of life, not married yet, married, no kids, married with kids of various ages, on second marriages. So we had a wide range of experience to draw from, because it was really important to me that people be able to come to UP and see a grittier show than they might be used to, but also see the truth and the warmth that they're used to when they come to the network. And it was marvelous that the network gave us room to explore some darker stories than I think people might expect, and to be able to dig down deeply into surprising relationships and reactions as a result. And I think
speaking,
when people do come to the show, I hope they'll come ready to embrace a full range of experience.
As we're speaking, Cheryl, in Ferguson, Missouri, people there are marking the one-year anniversary of the shooting of Michael Brown, and the year since it's led to a lot of questioning and a lot of controversy over the relationship between police and people, especially African-American men and African-American women, people of color. And as we speak, by the way, as some of the cable news networks are reporting, there was another protest going on in there. I'm curious whether there was any talk about doing a Ferguson-like or exploring a Ferguson-like subject on this first season. And there's an episode coming up that sort of puts a twist on that kind of thing. It's called Ghost, and it's the third episode where Allison has to deal with someone who shot her as opposed to she's shooting somebody.
Absolutely. You know, Ferguson weighed very heavily on our minds and hearts just as citizens as we were working on the show. And while we do not have an episode in this first season specifically addressing the issues of Ferguson, we did feel a responsibility to look very carefully at police conduct in every episode and make sure that we were being honest about how people feel in their interactions with the police. But the case that comes up in Ghost is a very personal story. It does not have the political or racial aspects that the Ferguson situation does. I would hope that if we are fortunate enough to come back for a second season, that we'll be able to explore these larger issues in more depth. But in the first season, we wanted to focus more on smaller stories so that viewers have an opportunity to get to know our regular cast and their community. And then, as I said, in success, we hope to be able to branch out beyond that.
Flipping over, what are some of the family issues that you're dealing with on the program?
We have four teenagers under one roof, so there are a lot of issues about acceptance and self-image, dating, social responsibility, and just finding your place in a world where you were already struggling and suddenly your world is twice as crowded as it was before. And that's not just for the niece and nephew, that's for the daughter and son also. Allison's children have been raised to be very giving and very open and very supportive, and Tim's children were not raised the same way. So there's a clash of values and certainly a clash of expectations, but I think anybody who has teenagers in their lives or still remembers being a teenager will recognize the kind of pivotal moments that we're dealing with. Because, you know, at that age, everything is hugely important because you're going through it for the first time. And I know I still can remember those painful moments and those joyous moments of my teenage years. And I hope the viewers will be able to recognize their own trials in what the kids go through.
You're hearing Cheryl Anderson. She is the creator and she is the executive producer of Ties That Bind. It's the big move in the scripted series for Up, the network known for uplifting entertainment. It premieres this Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Cheryl joins us live from Vancouver, British Columbia. Great and way up north, right here this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live on this Monday afternoon from New York, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you have a question or comment for Cheryl, we invite you to take part. That's what this is all about. Show is better when you are. So give us a call. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. We are here with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, for an hour, sometimes 90 minutes. And we should point out that our Monday simulcast with Brooklyn Penn Media is on hiatus until Labor Day. But if you want to catch up on those episodes, here's where you go. You can watch as well as hear them. It's on YouTube, www.youtube.com/BK Independent TV. That's www.youtube.com/BK Independent TV. Those replays are also available on Vimeo.com, and some of them are available on www.ubctvnetwork.com. That's www.vimeo.com and www.ubctvnetwork.com. UBCTV, the upcoming urban programming network. Cheryl, for our first year of the television series, in terms of guest stars, you got quite a few very notables. You got two from Beverly Hills 90210, both of them now in a writing and producing, directing too, Jason Priestley, Luke Perry you mentioned earlier. And you also have C. Thomas Howell. Many people know him from The Outsiders and other movies, and lately on Grimm.
Yeah, we were very, very fortunate to have terrific guest stars. Most notably, the three gentlemen that you mentioned, we were delighted that they were all able to take time out of their incredibly busy schedules and join us. There are friendships within our creative community that include the three of them, so it was like welcoming old friends, to a party, because we really had a good time shooting this show. And being able to share it with special guests like the three of them and all our guest stars was a real pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And you also have Kirsten Proud. Some people know her from the Twilight Saga. And some might know her from a very popular ABC Family series from way back when it was the Family Channel, Kyle XY,
yes. Kirsten was terrific because we reached out to her and she actually canceled a trip to LA to stay in Vancouver to be on the show. And so that was a delight for all of us. We were very fortunate that people responded to the show. We're well aware that the network is new to a lot of people, and if any of your listeners are trying to figure out exactly what the network is and where to find it, they can go to uptv.com, learn more about the network, and find out when we air in their time period. But the guest stars were terrific because they responded to the material and to the opportunity to act with Kelly and Dion and Jonathan and our four fabulous teenagers, Reese, Maitreya, Mitchell, and Natasha. And so it was a real gift to have them come and participate in a brand new show on a fairly new network.
You're involved with the channel UpTV that not only is, through this project, getting involved in the world of scripted television as far as series go, but they've been doing a lot of made-for-TV movies that have broken new count, especially women count, both in writing and directing. What do you think still needs to be done to have more women participate in television in places where you are, as a creator and as executive producer, someone who is running the show?
I subscribe to the Gina Davis Initiative. Wherever possible, use a woman. I did my best to fill our director's ranks and our writer's ranks with women. I mean, you have to be talented, but I want to take this opportunity to help other women in the business, and also in terms of casting, to be open to gender and racial diversity when we were casting all of our guest stars. But I think the most important things in terms of helping women advance in this industry are for women to help each other and for women to demonstrate that We should be considered as quickly and as often as men, and for men to recognize that, you know, we can bring the same things to the table that they can, and that what really matters is the story you have to tell, not whether you're a man or a woman, and not your race or national origin or anything else. It needs to be the story you have to tell and the way you can tell it. And if that is regarded first, as it is at UP, then I think it'll become a level playing field much faster.
And we will keep it there. Ties and Binds, the first original scripted series from UP TV, the Uplifting Entertainment Network, premieres this Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local list for where UP is available in your area on cable and satellite. As Cheryl said before, for more details about the network online, here's where you go. It's www.uptv.com. It's www.uptv.com. Cheryl Anderson, creator and executive producer of Ties and Binds, starring Kelly Williams of the Practice Army Wives fame. Thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting the show off the ground on UP and being a groundbreaker for that channel. Have a great time with the first season. Hopefully it's the first of many, many more. We appreciate you being with us.
I appreciate that so much, Simon, and thank you for the time to talk about the show. Well, we
you are very
see
welcome.
Everybody Wednesday night.
For sure. You're very welcome, Cheryl. Take care. Have a great week.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheryl Anderson, the creator and executive producer of Ties That Bind on UP, joining us live from where the show is produced, Vancouver, British Columbia. And now it's time to bring back a regular feature on this program. It's the Classic Trivia Question of the Week. And if you are first and correct with the answer, we have two prizes for you. A Brooklyn Planet Media tote bag and a wonderful new book by Neil deGrasse Tyson, the host of Cosmos last year on Fox and this year Star Talk on National Geographic Channel. The book is called Death by Black Hole and Other Cosmic Quandaries. It's published by W.W. Norton and Company, and you can have that along with the Brooklyn Penn Media tote bag if you know the answer to the question we are about to pop at you. In the 1950s, one of the great genres of television at that time was the anthology drama. All sorts of anthologies hosted by people like Alfred Hitchcock, Rod Serling of the Twilight Zone, continuing characters, new plots every week. One of the most popular was The Millionaire. It ran for 5.5 years from 1955 to 1960 on CBS. It was all about a millionaire named John Beresford Tipton. You never saw him on camera, but he had this habit every week of giving out $1 million tax-free to people he did not know. And, of course, the plot was all about how this person got a position to get the check and what that person did or didn't do when the money was received. Well, every week, the show would open up in part by showing you where the millionaire lived. And that's our question. Where did the millionaire live? Where did the millionaire live? If you know the answer, here's how you participate. You email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Enclose your name and your mailing address, and if you first get the correct answer, you win the Book of Enemy Tokai and Neil deGrasse Tyson's book, Death by Black Hole and Other Cosmic Quandaries, published by W.W. Norton. You have until Friday afternoon to make it happen. If you don't like using email, use Twitter. This particular hashtag TWBT. That's hashtag TWBT. That's what the options made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch, the folks that remind all of you, it's so easy to create your own social soundtrack using what they have to offer. So give them a try. Find out how at Hopscotch.com. Thanks, as always, to Marty Michael and the gang at Hopscotch for making that Twitter option happen. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or use Twitter, hashtag TWBT. Either way, you're first and correct with the answer, you win. And if you just came in now to listen to the show and you missed the question, don't worry. We'll post the question tomorrow on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, you have to be in it to win it. So give it a go. And text your luck and all the very best. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We are now in year 9 of the program All About Television. Happy to have you with us. We started the first Monday in August 2007, and we've been around ever since. Currently on Blog Talk Radio, Mondays and Fridays at this hour. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New Weber, York, 80 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you aboard. Coming up our next half hour, we'll have two alumni of the New York Television Festival who just struck it big a week ago with their new series on the CW, Significant Mother, Erin Cardillo, and Rich Keith, the folks joining us live from Los Angeles. And this Friday on Swampy Televised, we will have the founder and executive director of that festival, Terrence Gray. He's been with us the last few years with an annual August interview. This Wednesday, the festival will announce who's in the running in their annual independent pilot competition, where independent producers get their chance to do series pilots and get the attention of both the public and network and programming executives. Terrence Gray, head of the New York TV Festival, live with us and exclusive this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Remember, you can catch up on recent episodes anytime by going to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And all our simulcasts of this year with Brooklyn Penn Media are available now on YouTube. They're also available as our BK Live segment that we did last month on Mondays and Tuesdays for that channel. Check it all out at youtube.com/BK Independent TV. That's youtube.com/BK Independent TV. All for you, 24/7. When we come back, Erin Cardillo and Rich Keith from Significant Mother on the CW. And a tribute to pioneering sportscaster Frank Gifford, who passed away yesterday morning at the age of 84. That's all coming up after we pause the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are catching the best internet radio on the planet, live with you, www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Jeff Adams Show. Catch Jeff and his creative comedy folks tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. In fact, he's on Monday through Thursday at that hour. That's 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best of VTR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Televised. It's Monday afternoon, 10th of August. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. Some wonderful guests coming your way in the half hour ahead. So it's a tribute to Frank Gifford. And if you have a question or comment for our guest, or you want to weigh in on Mr. Gifford himself, you give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room, Simon Apple 04, still not operating. We're going to try to see if we can get it up and running for Friday's program. And one programming note, we were hoping to go 90 minutes today, and at the top of the hour, bring an exclusive interview with Dave Smith of the research firm Smith Geiger, which has done some fascinating stuff lately about how millennials use and don't use television. Unfortunately, because of a glitch with Blog Talk Radio, where we could not expand the show physically from 60 to 90 minutes, normally we are on an hour, we can't have Dave on today, but we are rescheduling from as early as Friday, maybe next Monday or Friday, if that Friday day does not work out. So we apologize for that, and we will make sure we deal with that glitch powerfully so it does not happen again. So again, Dave Smith will not be on today at the top of the hour, but he will be with us on a future episode in the very near future. Speaking of the near future, the CW's near future includes an original comedy series that involves alumni from the New York Television Festival, which is entering its second decade this October. The program is called Significant Mother. It is a very quirky plot. It's got interesting reviews, and it's on the CW tonight at 9:30 Eastern Pacific Time, right after a new episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway? Joining us live from Los Angeles are the festival alumni and the co-creators and executive producers of Significant Mother, Erin Cardillo and Rich Keith. Erin and Rich, welcome in.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Pleasure to have you both. Erin, we'll start with you. How did this idea come together, and what's been the reaction over the last week?
Oh, how did this idea, those are two questions. Yes, how did this idea come together? Let's see. A couple years ago, we were hired by Alloy Entertainment to develop this premise for them as a web series. So we pitched the web series around town. We landed at CW Seed, which is the CW's online. They allowed us to develop the concept there. We did three episodes for them, three full 22-minute episodes for the web in 2014, and they ended up not airing the show on the web, but just moving us directly over to the network this year. So it's been a kind of crazy journey and really exciting.
And Rich, what's been the reaction over the last week now that you have episode one out of the way and episode two is tonight?
I think the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, there's been some less than thrilled critics and some very thrilled fans. And I personally like to think that the fans' enjoyment offsets the some of the critics. For us, it, for us, it's, you know, the show we made was not necessarily aimed at critics. We wanted to make a show that was kind of fun, lighthearted, and could appeal to multiple demographics, from people in their, you know, early 20s all the way up to, you know, mid 40s, which is the mother's age on the show. So we wanted everybody to have something to watch for. And I think based on the online response, it seems like we've been able to do that, which is nice, especially because we've been working on it for 3 years. It was nice to finally get it out there. Whether the reviews were good or bad, it was just nice to finally have somebody see it.
Yeah. And we were, you know, we were the, apparently the, you know, as a summer scripted series, we were the highest rated summer scripted series for CW in 5 years. So we were pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
I asked Cheryl this in the half hour before. I'll ask you, both of you, is this situation based on anybody you know?
Yes, Rich's mother sleeps with a lot of his friends.
she's sexy, what can I say?
No, it's not based on anyone we know. Although, you know, I think people have probably thought about sleeping with their friends' mothers at a certain point. I mean, I can't speak to that, but Rich, what would you say?
I mean, hopefully when people think of it, they think better of that idea, unlike the characters in our show. But, you know, I mean, I think like Cheryl said, we did, you know, like with anything you write, while the premise isn't something that we could necessarily pinpoint a moment in our lives to relate it to, I think each of the characters has different little pieces of us in it, you know, from Nate being kind of an obsessive control freak like I am to I don't know, Aaron, what's the quality you want to list of yourself that's in one of the characters?
Yeah, I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
Okay. I realized after I said obsessive control freak, I didn't want to list a negative attribute on your behalf.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Maybe impulsive.
Lydia
is a bit impulsive. So I think I can relate to that.
And for people who haven't seen the plot or seen the series yet, it is about a Portland restaurateur who gets surprised. Mm-hmm. And the surprise is that his best friend is making love to his mother.
Yes.
Yes. And what they find out in the pilot is, you know, he thinks it's sad enough when it's just them sleeping together casually. But what we find out in the pilot is they actually have real feelings for each other, which is actually significantly worse for him than the casual sex was. So it's interesting. And then the series is sort of about how the relationship between the son's best friend, Jimmy, and his mother, Lydia, progresses like any normal relationship would, but having the added sort of strange element that it's the, you know, the family, son's best friend of it all.
Rich, given that the series is set in Portland, was Portlandia in any way an inspiration?
I mean, Portlandia is an inspiration just because it's such a funny, well-written show. So I think it just inspires me as a writer to want to write something that's that clever and that insightful. I don't know that it was a specific inspiration. I think we picked Portland because we wanted to set it in a, you know, he owns a restaurant. We wanted to set it in an up-and-coming foodie culture. And really, there's nowhere as up-and-coming, both as a city and as a food city, as Portland. And we also really like Portland, Aaron and I both. You know, we both spent a lot of time there. So I think for us, we wanted to try to maybe have a little, our show be a little bit more of a love letter to Portland rather than constantly poking fun at it. Though we do have like a biodynamic urban farmer character who, I guess by having that, does poke fun at Portland a little bit. But yeah, I think we try to feature it more as a character in the show that is lovable versus laughable.
Aaron, how both of you are actors. How does acting influence how both of you write, either separately or together?
Well, you know, we did both start as actors and still are actors. And we tend to, when we write, our last draft of the script is usually Rich and I sort of sitting around acting out all of the scenes to make sure that they sound like peep talk. So I think it's been an interesting part of our process the fact that we both have acting backgrounds, and you know, it's interesting for us because we get to, when we're writing the scripts and sort of acting out all the scenes, we get to sort of play a lot of different characters and have a lot of different perspectives than we would normally just in our acting careers.
And we also get to make Aaron's neighbors think that they have really weird people living upstairs constantly arguing about dildos and sleeping with each other's mothers as we act out loudly in her living room.
We tend to work in my dining room, so that's our office space currently.
And Rich, how did you two connect? Because you have different acting backgrounds. Aaron, I believe, was once a character on Suite Life on Deck on the Disney Channel,
yes.
Long-running comedy there. And you not only acted in all sorts of things, TV series, episodes, commercials, but you also had some filmmaking experience.
So Aaron and I met about 10 years ago at an acting class here in L.A. called Warner Laughlin Studios, and just became friends that way. And then sort of in the interim 10 years, I think we both started writing on our own. We started writing features, and we started swapping the features back and forth, and sort of, I think, both realized that we had a similar sensibility and liked each other's writing. And so I had an idea for a pilot a few years ago and was thinking about trying to write with someone, and I just, you know, immediately thought of Aaron. So we decided to give it a shot, and we wrote that together. And then that got us, you know, our first sort of round of meetings with the TV industry here, and sort of helped us sort of realize that this was something we wanted to keep doing. And in terms of filmmaking, yeah, I mean, I used to do, I was in a sketch comedy show, a weekly show that was a little bit like SNL called Acme This Week. And I would do all the digital shorts for them. And then about 2 years ago, sort of right when Aaron and I really started writing together, I wrote and directed a feature called Grow Up Already that is on Hulu now with Johnny Simmons and Odette Annabelle and Francis Fisher. So I've done a little bit of everything on the technical side, and Aaron's really great, you know, working with actors. She teaches acting. She still works at the studio we met at. So I think it's kind of nice when we're on set. We have a very complementary skill set.
Significant Mother is the CW's new comedy. It's on tonight at 9:30 Eastern Pacific Time, right after a new episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway? We have got the people who've made it happen, co-creators and executive producers, Aaron Cadillo and Rich Keith. And they're both alumni of the New York Television Festival. We're getting to those experiences in a moment. They both join us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow We'll Be Televised, the program all about television. Now it's ninth year on the air. Simon Applebaum, new with you live from New York. Happy you're aboard on this 10th of August, 2015. You have a question or comment for Aaron and Rich, give us a call, 646-652-2906. And Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests will be the founder and executive director of the New York Television Festival, our very good friend, Terrence Gray. He's normally with us in August, and we have him back. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, and wait till you hear what the festival is doing this year, including it's gotten into the TV production business, and they're already working on their first series. You'll hear about that. You'll hear about the independent pilot competitors who will be announced on Wednesday, and some big deals they have come with lately from A&E, Starz, and other programmers and networks. That's all Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Aaron, you and Rich were involved with the festival with an entry in 2013. What was that entry? How did it do? And how did that experience impact your careers from there?
We wrote a pilot in, when was that, Rich? I guess in 2013.
Yes.
And submitted it to the festival. It was great. We had a wonderful experience there. Terrence was wonderful. We just loved being a part of that festival.
We were part of the comedy script contest, so we didn't submit a filmed pilot. We submitted a written pilot.
Yes, sorry. That is true. That is true. And we, you know, when we got back, we found out that CW Seed actually participated in the festival. We had already been developing this pitch with Alloy Entertainment, and I think being a part of the festival was a big reason CW Seed wanted us to come in and pitch this idea to them. So it was great.
And that led to, you won that script contest, and that led to a deal with Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yes, and got us repped by CAA, and we're actually now at UTA, but we're with our same agent that sort of found us at the festival, who's fantastic. So it definitely put our career on a path to where it's at now, for sure.
What do you both think about the fact that we now have all these festivals springing up around the country, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's the new Series Fest that just happened in Denver about a month or so ago, you have Los Angeles, you have, of course, New York going second decade, you've got Austin, Texas, and it seems that more and more we're seeing these festivals focusing on television specifically, or things like South by Southwest and Sundance, and American Black Film Festival that started film festivals, but they're veering more and more into creating new television and new TV talent.
I think festivals are incredible for a ton of reasons, one of which is that it really gives new artists a place to showcase their work. They're gatekeepers in the business, you know, of it all. You have to have agents and managers and connections to production companies in order to get your work out there a lot of the time. And so the festivals are really a wonderful way to bridge that.
Yeah, and it's also a really nice way. I mean, now that the TV business model has sort of changed, it makes sense, I think, that the festivals are starting to open it up to TV, because TV is, there's so many more outlets, you know, with the amount of channels now, and, you know, there's new ones popping up every day. And so you don't necessarily have to create a TV show in the traditional Hollywood TV system anymore. So it's kind of cool now that is becoming open to festivals and everyone else. I know, you know, for us, the New York Television Festival specifically is about as good as it gets in terms of actually translating doing well at the festival into real world work and experience. You know, some festivals aren't as good about that, but there's a lot of them that are.
Rich, when the CW said, "We love your CW Seed series, let's go and make a full-fledged broadcast television program," what was the biggest hurdle or pitfall that you had to deal with, both you and Aaron, to expand the program from being a digital series to a broadcast series?
I think, we sort of formatted our show when we did it as a web series as 3 22-minute episodes that were ready to be moved over to TV, and then those 22-minute episodes could each be divided into an 11-minute webisode with it to be continued. So in terms of storytelling, we were pretty prepared. I think the biggest difference is, you know, for the web, we had a lot more freedom in terms of what language we wanted to use or images we would like to show. And, you know, being that CW is a broadcast over-the-air network, the FCC has a very big say in what can and can't be shown. So I think it was probably trying to keep the show feeling edgy and pushing the boundaries where we could, but then also realizing that there were some really, you know, hard lines that we could not cross, and trying to figure out creative ways to get around them or you know, honor the rules while still doing some version of what we wanted to do comedically.
Aaron, how do you deal with that? Bringing an edge to a series, you know, keeping some level of edge, but not, you know, without having the certain the boundaries that are taken away when you do something online, or you do something for Netflix, you do something for a cable network, HBO.
I know, it sounds so lovely to do something for the web or cable or HBO after this experience, only because, you know, on every level, every time we did a draft of the script, you have to submit it to standards and practices for the network. And every network has different standards and practices. And, you know, I think what we tried to do was, you know, we just submitted the script as they were from the digital series to see what they would allow and what they wouldn't allow. And then, you know, I think the most challenging part was that sometimes about, you know, a week or two before we were shooting, we would get notes back from standards and practices telling us we couldn't do something or say something. And in the process, you know, we would have to rewrite scenes sometimes on the fly, which is kind of an added challenge to the process, which was already challenging because we found out that we got picked up in March and we were supposed to be shooting by May, which is a pretty fast timeline to get all the scripts done anyway. But then
Unfortunately, it looks like somehow or other, Aaron and Rich just dropped off the line. Aaron and Rich, give us a call back, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you back on the line. For some reason, the phone just got cut off. One of those freaky things that sometimes happens with the wonderful Internet. So we'll try to get Aaron and Rich back on the line. The program they're involved with is Significant Mother, and episode two is tonight at 9:30 Eastern Pacific Time, right after Whose Line Is It Anyway on the CW. We should point out that the series started in digital form on their website, CW Steed. By the way, for more details about the show, it is available online at www.cwtv.com. It's www.cwtv.com. Again, Aaron, Rich, give us a call back. For some reason, we got disconnected, so give us a call back, 646-652-2906, and just like that, you declare, and they are back. Okay, Rich and Aaron, you're back with us.
Yeah, we're back.
Hi, sorry about that.
No problem. It must be great, though, that A, the CW as a network, first of all, thought highly of your program to get it on online first, and then to trust that you would come up with a way to expand it for broadcast. So it really says something about their network and their people, led by Mark Pedowitz, their president, to say, hey, we trust what you do.
Yeah, I mean, they've been very supportive.
Yeah, they were wonderful. Go ahead, Rich.
Oh, no, just, I mean, Mark Pedowitz, Michael Roberts, Liz Weiss, who's our sort of our executive oversees the show. They've all been very,
Rick
very
Haskins.
Supportive. Rick Haskins, yeah, who sort of brought us in on the digital side. But they've all been, I mean, to let sort of unknown writers sort of guide their own series is pretty unheard of. And, you know, they were very hands-on in terms of sharing their thoughts and opinions and helping shape the show and, you know, trying to mold it into being something a little bit more than just sort of the silly concept. But they were very much... a supportive set of collaborators. You know, they sort of took what we wanted to do and helped us grow that rather than sort of telling us what to do and us sort of following suit.
We have a call, folks. Let's take it. Hello, you're on to Marvel Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, good to have you back. One of our favorite callers over the years on our program. And great to have you back as we're continuing the start of our ninth year on the air. Go ahead, Rick.
I just wanted to ask you guys what the biggest challenges were coming from doing internet shows or digital shows and now being full-blown showrunners on a network TV show.
The challenges were basically that we had never done it before and didn't really have any precedent for it. So
yeah.
It was a big experiment. It was a huge learning curve. Luckily, we have an amazing executive named Trip Reed, who helped from Alloy Entertainment, who helped us through the process. He also directed a bunch of our episodes, and he's taking the show through post and everything as well. So a big collaborative effort, big learning curve, and sort of trial by fire.
And I think with this particular concept, the most challenging aspect of it was trying to decide week to week how much to sort of stick to the original concept of the pilot, how much to branch out, how whether or not to make it a one-off series of one-off episodes or have the couple grow. And, you know, we opted for having them grow throughout the season, which then obviously presents its own set of challenges because you don't want them in a comedy to grow too far beyond the initial characters you set up. So it was definitely like a multi-layered set of not problems, but things to sort of figure out and learn as we did.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, congratulations, and I'll definitely be checking out more of the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Take care. Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome, Rick. All the greatest. Take care. Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia. Significant Mother, episode 2, tonight, 9:30 Eastern Pacific Time, right after Whose Line Is It Anyway on the CW. Check your local news for the CW station in your area. Here in New York, it's WPX-TV, channel 11. And for more details online, and if you want to see the original episode of Significant Mother online at CWC, here's where you go, www.cwtv.com. That's www.cwtv.com. Eric Cadillo, Rich Keith, co-creative executives of Significant Mother, New York Television Festival winners and alumni, thank you again for being with us. Congratulations on how the show is going so far. Hopefully a wonderful and long run in store.
Thank you very much.
Simon.
You're welcome, Aaron Rich. All the greatest. Take care.
Take care.
Take care. Thanks.
Aaron Cadillo and Rich Keith joining us live from Los Angeles. By now you know that yesterday morning, one of the great pioneering sportscasters of all time in television or for any media, Frank Gifford, passed away at the age of 84 in his home in Connecticut. What made Frank so special was, number one, he was one of the first sports athletes, celebrated athletes, to get involved with television and radio, I might add. His first job was being sports director and sports anchor at WCBS TV and radio here in New York. He was the drive time anchor on radio. He was the prime time sports anchor at 6 and 11 p.m. on the local newscast. When CBS got into regional sports television with football, done by Wayne Fisk, the executive producer, Frank was one of the first people hired. And ultimately, Gifford became the top part of the top team on regional sports television, involved with play-by-play man Ray Scott and fellow commentator Tom Brookshire, a former football player as well. And then in 1971, ABC hired him, and the rest is super history, being first play-by-play and only commentator for Monday Night Football and doing it for over 600 games over a quarter century. The last 10 years with Al Michaels had a lot to say about him last night in the Hall of Fame game. The thing you should know about Frank Gifford, what made him such a pioneering and enduring sportscaster, was that, number one, as I said, one of the few sports athletes to do it and do it great. And the secondly, he did it without catchphrases, he did it without bombast, he did it without bloviating. Two quotes really say it. Bob Iger, the CEO of Walt Disney, who he worked for so many years, and I quote, "His many achievements were defined by a quiet dignity and a personal grace that is seldom seen in any arena. He truly embodied the very best of us." And I'm Michael's last night on Sunday Night Football. I'll forever remember Frank as a man who, no matter what was going on around him, was always the coolest guy in the room. And he was. Frank Gifford, dead at the age of 84. One of the true giants, as well as a giant, in sports television. Friday on Survivor Televised, Terrence Gray, the founder and executive director of the New York Television Festival, starting its second decade this fall. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Survivor Televised. Check out recent episodes at our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/television, and the podcast on iTunes.com. Download to your smartphone, tablet, take us on the go. And don't forget our podcast replays at youtube.com/BK Independent Media. Remember, you can also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and email me. We'd love to have your thoughts on today's show. It's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. And my Twitter address is at UBCSimonTWBT. At UBCSimonTWBT. However you communicate, please do so. Because remember, you matter. And your thoughts do as well. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants. Not only those of Blog Talk Radio, our production associates Amy Mexico and Candace Williams. And you tell us Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator and chief executive of this enterprise is Mr. Alan Levy. For tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of the week. Back here Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.